Get ready. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Weekly Cooldown. I am Kami Jace, your host for another episode. If you're joining us for the first time, this is the show where we get to know the gaming news of the week, and we get to know our guest. It is episode 122 of the Weekly Cooldown. It is March 26th. Last episode, I said it was episode 120. I believe I got the date right, but I got the episode number wrong. And listen, it happens, okay? I do a lot of these. I get fried throughout the week with work and other things, and sometimes I forget what episode we're on. But I've remembered this time. It is episode 122. And we have some interesting headlines, some interesting stories, and an interesting guest. So, without further ado, let's get it going. Players looking for a Nier Automata patch, specifically for the Steam version of the game, have taken to review bombing the game on Steam. The game was recently released for the Windows Store and the Game Pass for PC. It is a port of the Xbox One's Become a God edition, which apparently has less issues that seem to affect the game's Game of the Yorha edition that was released on Steam. The issues have been addressed using a mod, however, players would like Square Enix to make those same changes available on Steam. As of this recording, there have been 1,729 negative reviews since March 18th when the version dropped on the Windows Store and on Game Pass. Microsoft has renamed Xbox Live to the Xbox Network in order to help differentiate between its online networks and the live subscription memberships. The Xbox Network, according to Microsoft, refers to the underlying online services. Microsoft has stated that there are no changes being made to the actual service, and that this is merely a change to distinguish between the online service and the live subscriptions held by Xbox users. Apex Legends may finally be getting a Titan, perhaps. For those who don't know, Apex Legends is set in the Titanfall universe, in which some special soldiers were able to pilot massive robots, aptly named Titans. Well, according to a data miner by the name of Beast12, there may soon be a character with the ability to call in a Titan. The character's name apparently is Blisk. He comes with the ability to hack beacons, wall run, create a zone for extra damage, and call in a Titan to lay down some suppressive fire. He was originally a villain in the Titanfall games and could be set to be in the next season of Apex Legends. And finally, Turtle Rock Studios has put out a statement stating that their Left 4 Dead-like video game Back 4 Blood is going to take a little extra time. The game was originally slated for June. The game is now being pushed back until October 12, 2021. In a Twitter update, the studio says, Turtle Rock Studios is working hard to make Back 4 Blood the best game it can possibly be at launch, and the team needs more time to do this. The Back 4 Blood team also said that in the same tweet that an open beta will be coming this summer. And those are just some of the headlines for this week. Again, if you want to talk about any other headline, if I missed any that you really wanted to just hear me read about, or I don't know, maybe one of your favorite games is launching or your indie game is launching, like you made it and you want me to like tell people about it, just let's talk on Twitter. Twitter.com is where you can always catch me at KamiJaceGaming or at WKCooldown. Again, that's on Twitter.com, which recently sold the Jack Dorsey sold his NFT. I still don't quite know what that is, but he sold it for way more money than I have, and he already has tons of money, and I'm pretty freaking mad at him. But anyway, I'll get over it, I guess. We have a guest. We have a guest. We have a guest. And his name is pretty interesting. you may know him from his own podcast. I believe is the Snescapades.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Welcome, Steampunk Link.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. You introduced me originally as an interesting guest. I was worried somebody else was here. I don't...
Well, you know, everyone's interesting in my book. I think I'm the boring one. You all make the show what it is.
I don't know about that. And I mean, as this show goes on, I think that I might be rapidly showing my old man cred here. Like, I think, like, maybe like the Ghost of Christmas Present, I will just start rapidly aging here on mic as I sort of reveal how in the past I am usually stuck. So
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I wish I were more into, and not to say that I'm not at all, but I wish I were actively invested the way some people are in the kind of retro game community, because the love that people have for those games is like super contagious, but not enough for me to like like try to build up the collection we once had when I was a kid.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm definitely not like a collector these days. In fact, I'm kind of trying to offload a lot of my physical collection, and I tend to just now just, you know, do the research and you know, mm-hmm. just find other ways of experiencing those games. But yeah, I you know, I really like researching video game history and just talking about people's pleasant old memories. And I mean, that's why I did that whole Christmas thing that you were a part of, that you very generously participated in, and that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's quickly talk a little bit about your podcast. You host the Snescapades podcast. What is it all about?
It is about, first of all, it is about talking over trains that are going by my house, which I'm hoping is not bleeding into the mic right now. No, we are a kind of a video game history podcast. We are trying to talk about every single Super Nintendo game that came out in North America chronologically. We just started April of 1993, and anytime we enter a new month now, we've started talking about the issue of Nintendo Power that came out that month, as well as just kind of talking about some, you know, things that happened in actual world history, sometimes some less pleasant things that happened in actual world history.
Sure.
But yeah, so that's mainly what we do. It's been a lot of fun. We also kind of, as well as talking about the history of games, we kind of give our little reviews of them. The whole shtick is we play them briefly and judge them harshly because we really only have a couple weeks to play any of these games. Some of them we are playing for the first time. And then we try to rank them. We have one long list that we are just trying to rank every single North American Super Nintendo game. And right now I believe Super Mario World is still at number one at the very bottom, which I think is like somewhere in like the 160, 170 range, is a game called Race Drivin'.
Well, now, obviously you must have played this. So what, I don't know what this game is. So tell us, what do you think of it?
It was a very ill-conceived, on the Super NES anyway, first-person perspective driving game in which you're selecting one of three stunt tracks to, I guess, race on. It's a very limited game, but the real Achilles heel of this one is that it literally takes, like, a whole second to draw a screen in here. So like you're literally, it's almost like watching a slideshow of somebody behind the wheel of a poorly rendered car on a poorly rendered track. It is quite bad. Interestingly though, someone on Twitter, I believe, someone out of Brazil who does these mods where he tries to, or actually I don't know their gender. They try to, make graphical improvements to certain SNES games. They've actually created a version of the game that runs at a reasonable frame rate, and it's actually kind of impressive looking. It's still a very limited game that's not very fun, but it's impressive that somebody took this really, really awful game that I would not have said deserved a second look and made it playable.
Yeah, absolutely. I I find that people seem to be very invested in stuff like that for some reason. Like someone linked today a unpublished demo of, or an unfinished rather, demo of a game called Star Fox Event Horizon, which is up on the mod database as a Free Space 2 mod. And I guess they truly wanted some kind of Star Fox adventure game. so bad that they went into modding and modded the game Free Space 2. And now there's a kind of what if Nintendo actually gave a shit about Star Fox at all. And now there's this, you know, essentially a game out there with the skinned over Free Space 2, whatever that is.
Huh. I hadn't even heard about that. That is interesting. I'm not the hugest Star Fox fan. I loved Star Fox 64, but the rest of them are kind of blank spots for me, at least until recently when we talked about Star Fox for the show, the original one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, I remember Star Fox, what was it? Was it Star Fox Zero or Star Fox Alpha, something like that, that came out on the Wii U that looked really, really cool. And then the reviews came out and it sounded like it wasn't all that great.
I don't know why they can't get it right. And I wish they would. I wish they would. I loved, as you say, Star Fox 64. There was Star Fox Assault, I think, for the GameCube. That was pretty cool. But then, like, even the on-foot adventure game wasn't the best. And they kind of did, like, a kind of re-release of 64 for the DS, if I remember correctly. And it's just, mm-hmm. They're just no good.
Yeah. See, again, going to show my old man cred here. The Nintendo franchise that I want them to bring back out of mothballs is Star Tropics, which has not seen an entry since the NES days.
Wow, no. Oh, I thought you might have said F-Zero.
No. I'm not much of a racing game person. I think F-Zero is cool, but I want to see another Star Tropics. I want to see what a modern interpretation of Star Tropics would even look like. Loved that game.
Tropics.
Yes, yeah. Oh, have you not heard of this game?
Never.
This game came with a note that you, a physical note from your character's uncle that you have to physically submerge in water to get a code to activate a submarine.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love things like that, and now I'm sad that we never had it. Wow.
Yeah, I know that one, that is a game that came out with the, like, NES Mini. It could be on the Nintendo Switch service. I'm not sure. I haven't checked their NES offerings lately. But, it's a really good one. It's a really fun action, like, kind of similar to Zelda.
Sure.
But, it's really fun. You're a kid visiting his uncle, who's this archaeologist or something, in some fictional islands. I think kind of meant to be like the Caribbean or Virgin Islands, kind of, you know, kind of a stand-in for that. And there are monsters, and your uncle disappears, and later on there are aliens, and it's pretty cool. And you use things like yo-yos and baseball bats to attack enemies. So
that's actually really cool. Yep. I'm looking at some pictures of it, and it actually reminds me of, and I hope you know what this is, Chrysalis?
Yes, I do know what Chrysalis is, yeah.
Great, because that game is a big part of my childhood, and I wish that they would make, like, a modern, upscaled Chrysalis. I want to know what that looks like real bad.
That was like a JRPG, right? Or was that more like a Legend of Zelda like kind of RPG?
Yeah, so it was like JRPG elements, but in the style of what we now think of like a like an open world kind of slash Legend of Zelda type.
Okay.
You know, like you're swinging the sword, you're not in like pick attack and then choose your attack and then you do the attack type JRPG. It was very cool. I never knew what I was doing because I was too young to understand what was going on.
But it's always stuck with me as one of those games that like only I know about, or only like my mom knows about because she played it sometimes, or my brother. And it makes me very happy when other people know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. No, it's, we did play that one a little bit. So kind of the origins of SNESCapades, my co-host and I, Emmy Zero, we used to do some stuff on YouTube a long time ago, and we had this idea of doing like trying to play every single NES game alphabetically. And as we kind of went through that, we were finding that like when it comes to the NES library, a lot of games, like if you're just to pull one at random off the shelf out of all 700 and however many games there were, you're probably going to get something that's not that great, to be honest. For all the absolute bangers that are on the system, there is just a lot of stuff that is almost unplayable by today's standards.
Sure.
And we found ourselves being very, very negative. And we were like, I don't really want to do that. Like, we're almost getting into, like, angry video game nerd territory, and I don't want to be that. So we switched focus to doing a video series about the Super NES, and I actually designed the whole thing around like having themed episodes, and even that wasn't really working. And then that was when we decided to make it into a podcast instead and go chronologically and try and focus on the history a little bit more.
So very good, very good, very good. Before we move on, I have to ask you, as you said, you are kind of dating yourself, so I'm going to ask you to do it one last time and tell us what, if anything, you have been playing this week.
All right. Well, for fun, I've actually been playing games on the Switch, so kind of modern. I've actually just been kind of cycling among three things. Hades, of course, a BAFTA award-winning as of today, I believe, Hades.
Yes, it is.
So, yeah, of course, that one. I've been doing, still doing the Animal Crossing thing. Love that game. A lot of fun. And
very good.
Been trying to get a little bit of exercise with the Ring Fit Adventure and that, and going for walks. So those three have been cycling through. And then for the show this week, I have been playing some Batman Returns on the Super Nintendo and some American Gladiators on the Super Nintendo.
Ooh. Good choices. Okay, I heard the disagreement. I really enjoyed Batman Returns. I had it for the Sega Genesis when I was young.
Yeah, that might be one where those were pretty different games. I would actually have to take a look at the Sega Genesis version. I'm not sure if they're different. The SNES one is fine. I don't think it's amazing, but we'll talk more about why when we record that episode this weekend. But American Gladiators is a not great game, but it's a topic very near and dear to my heart. Loved that show back in the day.
But the game...
The game is... It's better than the NES version.
Okay. Well, that's a little something.
Yeah.
At least a little bit. Perfect. 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 All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more show.
It's time to feel the rage. Join us on Film Rage, where we talk movies, current releases, coming attractions, streaming, and classic films as well. Directors and actors, beware, as you cannot hide from the rage. My name is Bryce, and I'm part of the Film Rage crew, which also includes Jim.
Hey, hey.
And Murray.
Yo.
Why is it you always talk all the time? I can't understand why your voice is so...
This is the Merman, the voice of reason. These two can't agree on anything most of the time. Some movies are Mondo, some are just... Every week, something is going to make us rage. Join us every Wednesday and...
Feel the rage!
Have you ever been reading through a stack of comics and thought, maybe I should see what this Arkham Asylum game is all about? Or been playing Marvel vs. Capcom and felt like you were at a real disadvantage since you didn't know who half the characters were? Well, Play Comics is the show for you. I'm Chris, and each episode we take a look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material. So whether you know the comics and want to know how all these games work, or you know the games and want to find out where all this craziness came from, go check out Play Comics at playcomics.com or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Thank you. welcome back to the show. So, it is time to talk about our stories for this week, and we're going to start with some potential Nintendo Switch news. We don't know yet, but we kind of know. So, to begin, a new Nintendo Switch is allegedly on the way. Rumors are still circulating about a new Nintendo Switch, which most are now speculating or calling the Nintendo Switch Pro. We're still unsure if it's even real. However, a Bloomberg report does state that Nintendo is set to use a NVIDIA technology to deliver 4K visuals on a 2021 model of the Nintendo Switch, which more or less seems to confirm that it's on the way. So, as exciting as this news is, again, I'll say it one more time because I don't want anyone to be like, I heard it on the weekly cooldown. It's coming. We don't know. We don't know.
Actually, confirmed, I have an uncle that works at Nintendo. And
Uncle Steven Nintendo himself.
Yeah. I actually know Nestor from Nestor's Adventures.
Wow.
No, actually, real talk, Emmy and I did work at Nintendo for a couple years as temps in their customer service department, but we don't actually still have any connections there, so.
Wow, royalty. but it does seem to be on its way. If the report is stating that they're, you know, working on like a OLED screen, they want to have 4K. They want to have, some new native resolutions on the handheld and the TV screen mode, then that should more or less confirm it. It may also kind of hint as to why we haven't heard much news from some of their bigger IPs, of course, like The Legend of Zelda. There's supposed to be a sequel to Breath of the Wild. We haven't really heard much since hearing about the sequel a couple of years ago now. So it's a lot of speculation. It's a lot of up in the air. NVIDIA seems to be involved, which is usually a decent confirmation that something is in the works.
Well, but there was a report that they ordered a bunch of screens or something, right? Like these very specific screens and other parts that seem to suggest that, this is happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought in addition to kind of talking about the possibility of it, I thought something that might be fun is to think about what Switch games do we need to see on a upscaled new version of the Switch, new Switch Pro. What do we want, right? We have a potential Christmas item on its way. What do we want to come with it?
Well, obviously, what I want is a new Star Tropics HD.
Of course.
basically just take Uncharted, except it's Mike Jones from Star Tropics now. And and there you go. There's your game. I don't know. Because I think a big part of, what I want or what I would expect would be based on what is Nintendo's game plan going forward as far as new hardware. Like, are we just going to consistently see like these sort of half steps from here on out because the Switch is kind of just right, and I don't know what Nintendo does after that other than just make a new Switch.
Sure.
We tend to only see like one Smash Brothers per hardware generation from Nintendo. So like if they're considering this like the new Switch, which, honestly, that is probably what they would call it. They like using the new as a name for things, even though, that's a title that comes with a little bit of baggage is, it's out for a while and it's no longer new anymore. But if this is like their new hardware, then maybe we get a new Smash Brothers in the next couple years, or maybe this is just a half step. And this is what they've been waiting on to announce the new Breath of the Wild. And hey, now it's going to perform better. The Switch, as much as I love it, there is obvious room for improvement there. Like even just running around my Animal Crossing Island, that thing can chug in places.
Sure.
It's not like Animal Crossing is pushing any huge boundaries graphics wise, I could see them just want to say like, that's why we've been waiting on this stuff. But I also don't know if like, because if this is a half step, it would seem like they need to still have these games available for people with the older hardware too. I wouldn't think they would want to leave them out. So
a lot of people are pointing to the kind of new 3DS that they did,
right?
Which kind like had a few exclusive games that were only available on the new 3DS, but nothing that caused a lot of ruckus, right? It wasn't like people were clamoring to play, I don't know, what was it, like the new Super Mario Brothers 3D or anything like that. It was just a few games here and there that they kind of released exclusively. Might have been Nintendo testing the waters or something like that. But it seemed odd that they would do that all the same, because in the past, sure, they may have released the Game Boy Advance and then the SP and then the Micro, but they were all still Game Boy Advance games.
Yeah, I mean, they did do a little bit of that half-step sort of thing, like with the Game Boy Color, where it was mostly backwards compatible with original Game Boy games, but there were a few special ones that, you know, were just specifically for the Color.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't be completely new ground to do something like that.
And I suppose that they also had the Nintendo DS, and then they also made the 3DS on top of it. So you have a point there. I have to wonder how much they are committed to doing that again, though. And I guess, I mean, we've already given all the examples. It could very well happen that if you want the next, really mainline Pokemon game, whatever that's going to be, you're going to have to get this potential Switch Pro. Or if you want Breath of the Wild 2, you're going to have to get the Switch Pro. And I know that would upset a ton of people who, especially during the pandemic, just recently got their Switch after it being sold out because, again, of the pandemic, so many people being home and needing something to do. It's a little bit of a dick move. A little bit, Nintendo, if you do it. I don't know if it's happening, but you have a track record.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I would think that it would almost certainly be that half step that we've been talking about. Because, I mean, they've already split the consumer base a little bit with the Switch Lite, because there are a few things you can't do on that thing that you can do on a proper Switch.
Yeah.
I think if you start fracturing the market too much there, that maybe that's, maybe that's a bad look.
It seems like Nintendo does this, though. They play around with their own base, and they make them do these like incredible backflips to get their games.
Yeah, at the end of the day, Nintendo is gonna Nintendo, and there's just no accounting for that.
Yeah, it boggles the mind, because they're basically in a class all their own. They don't truly have to compete with Sony and Xbox or Sony and Microsoft. They do what they want, and they make tons of money doing what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So it begs to the question, like, I get that you have all this money and influence, but why are you so, like, brazen about it, I guess?
Yeah, and sometimes Nintendo's own messaging about things is just like, it just reeks of, we hear you, we know what you want, but we're going to give you what we want to give you without any regard to what you actually are saying you want. You know, like, remember that E3 press conference they did with the whole robot chicken thing, where, like, they're actively making fun of, like, the person who's like, hey, why won't you port Mother 3 over here? And I was kind of like, that's a weird thing to do, Nintendo.
Yeah, completely make fun of your fans.
Just outright say, you know, like, yeah, no, we know what you want, but we don't give a shit.
We're not going to do it.
Reggie's going to explode you with his laser eyes now. Like, we don't care what you want.
It's very strange. It's very strange. But hey, Nintendo, and I know you listen to this show. I know it. Just go easy on us, okay? I am doing all right money wise. I don't want to have to drop like $350 to $400 on a new one, please.
Yeah, I mean, it's a it'd be a not great investment for me. I don't even have a 4K TV, and I really have no intention of getting one.
I don't
one,
need so. That part. Yeah, no, I don't need that part. Just, you know, just make the games good on what you got, and I'll see you in a couple of years, like the rest of us, or like the other consoles. You'll be fine. You'll be fine. Well, that's Nintendo news, but also, in a strange addition, Qualcomm news. Qualcomm, who I've probably never talked about on the show before, apparently once again in on the handheld, but also not handheld game, as it is reported that Qualcomm seems to be working on a similar Switch-like console. The report states that the device would feature detachable controllers, an SD card slot, it would run on Android 12, and also feature 5G, which is divisive in certain parts of the world. But very interesting that it would come with 5G. That would actually put it ahead of a lot of consoles already.
Yeah, so, and maybe I'm showing my old man cred here. Would that seem to imply or seem to suggest that you would need a bespoke phone plan just for your video game console in order to utilize that?
So that's a good question. Something we're seeing from game companies and even phone companies as of late is like they want you to buy their plan, but for your games, like not for the phone, like big deal. Phones, old hack, don't care. But your video games, now that's where it's at. So it's kind of like they're the kind of Microsoft approach lately, right? Games as a service. So it kind of sounds like if you buy the Qualcomm device, you may have to also buy like a plan so that you have access to the 5G, and then you can play games on your Qualcomm device. It's very confusing.
Yeah. Well, shoot. Sorry. I got like the train blaring at me right now. So there's a few things, you know, that I think just the whole thing just seems to beg a lot of questions. I mean, on the face of it, it seems kind of obvious. Like, yeah, a company like Qualcomm probably has the tech to make their own Switch and, you know, uh-huh. make it better. You know, I mean, we just got done talking about some of the Switch's shortcomings. It probably wouldn't be hard for Qualcomm to make a Switch competitor that could, frankly, eat Nintendo's lunch. But, yeah, like, where are all the games coming from? What does the 5G uh-huh. mean for this? You know, like, are you going to do, like, a total, you know, like, is it just going to be all streaming games? You know, because, I mean, might want to ask Google how that's going for them right now.
Yeah. I was going to say, if they were kind of savvy, I suppose, I guess what this could be is the world's first, or first, I guess, console made by a company that usually does video games, or excuse me, usually does cell phones. And then, I mean, they just do what Sony and Microsoft are doing, kind of making some deals with gaming companies to have like an online library, something that you buy from online. So probably digital only, not necessarily streamed, but I mean, you could probably make a deal with, either Amazon's Luna or, Google Stadia, if you want, and have something at least ready to go, and then by the next cycle of the console wars, you could have your next big thing ready to go as well. And then congratulations, you've probably drawn in some kind of market, some fans, some people who are fans of the console, and now you're in it. You're in it to potentially win it.
Possibly. I mean, I still see just a few issues with it. Like, for one thing, you know, from some of the buzz I was hearing about it, it almost sounded like this was going to be like an Android powered device.
Yes.
Maybe almost like an Ouya kind of deal, or
mm-hmm.
Maybe something like that. I don't know. But so this kind of reminds me of, you know, some of the questions, you know, back in like the PS3, Xbox 360 era, where it's like, well, why don't they just make a console where I can put whatever I want on it, or I can install whatever I want on it? It's like, well, because that's a computer. Like, you just get a computer and you hook it up to your TV. It, especially nowadays when they make computers that are, you know, have a form factor like smaller than the current consoles that are out right now. And I feel like maybe you run into a similar thing here. It's like, well, why don't they just make a Switch, except that, you know, you can install whatever you want on it? Well, because then it's just a phone, right? To some extent. You know,
right.
And I mean, as obvious as it seems, like, yeah, why haven't we had this already? The answer to that is kind of there already are things like this out there. Like, you can find like more dedicated or, you know, phone-like or tablet-like devices that are more built around gaming.
We've definitely tried the cell phone that is marketed as a game console thing before. I'm thinking in particular of the N-Gage, the Nokia N-Gage, who I did not do well. They had Tony Hawk's Pro Skater on it, though. That was pretty cool.
Well, of course, it just couldn't compete with the Gizmondo tablet or whatever it was, obviously.
Gizmondo? Is this real?
I don't know. I'm probably even saying the name wrong. This thing, it came out around, it was like a tablet that was for gaming.
Oh my god, you're right.
That came out around the same time as the N-Gage and did even worse.
I do remember that, yes.
I was trying to make a joke and I went too deep of a cut and now I can't get back up. Someone please throw me a rope.
Geez, I don't know if this one's strong enough, but we'll try to get you up. No, but you're right. It like, people have tried this before. They've basically tried what the Switch has succeeded at doing, right? Making that very strong handheld that also kind of doubles as a TV thing. And Qualcomm just, I guess, wants to kind of get in on it. Something I found interesting what you said, though, is the idea that why don't we just have a Sony or an Xbox with, you know, you can download anything you want onto it. I think Microsoft has taken that, aside from already making, you know, PCs, they've taken that idea and kind of turned it on its head with the Xbox Game Pass, right? So now you have the games as a service idea again, where you can basically get access to all of these games. They may not be yours to keep forever, but you pay Xbox $5 to $10 a month. They give you access to a full library of games that you can access on your Xbox or your PC. And they're also talking about maybe putting it on other consoles now. They're talking about maybe putting it on other, on like, making the same library accessible on other platforms. So now it's not a console that I can download anything I want onto, but a service where I can get any game I want on any console I want, which I think is disgustingly monopolistic, but also fascinating.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I feel like as long as you're, you know, positioning the service as, you know, like a, hey, this is a streaming service, this is not a, you're paying per game and things like that, like the Google Stadia is, on top of the fact that it is strictly a streaming service, that you lose access to the games you buy, you know, once you're no longer subscribed to the service, or at least that's my understanding of it. You know, I think that, you know, yeah, streaming games, you know, that's fine, as long as it is, you know, pretty explicit, like you're just paying for the service. You're not paying per game. You get unlimited access to it until you don't subscribe to the service anymore, you know, like Netflix and everything else, you know, and that's fine. But, you know, with whenever it comes to just, you know, like purely digital, you know, infrastructures and everything else, you know, you always have to worry, which, you know, I guess we'll talk about a little bit later, about, you know, what happens when those shut down and, you know, you lose access and everything else. So, you know, so that's why I'm always a little bit iffy on, you know, like, hey, this is going to be an all digital storefront. You're just going to download your games directly to the system. It's like, cool, but like, can I do anything else with, like, can I put this on a computer now? Or, you know, what happens when the servers shut down and I can't re-download it again?
Right. We will get into some of that in just a minute, but you have an excellent point as to why I have recently decided to buy more physical media, because I, first of all, I kind of miss the collecting of it, and secondly, I just want to know that it's mine. So
yeah,
there you go. Easy fix.
Yeah, I mean, the blanket thing is, like, when it comes to digital media, you know, I'm essentially paying the same price that I would have for a physical disc, but mm-hmm. I don't have the same rights and privileges that I would if it were a physical disc. I can sell a physical disc back to somebody. I can loan it to somebody. I can't do that with a digital game. So why am I paying the same price for it when I don't have the same level of ownership over it?
Yeah.
You know, why are these things still $60 or $70 on top of all the friggin' microtransactions and collector's editions and all the other garbage that make these things end up being like $100 or more when all is said and done?
Absolutely. Well, we will get to some of that in just a minute. But first, we have to quickly go over someone we were talking about previously, Microsoft, because they are apparently in discussions to buy Discord, something no one seems to want. Discord is considering the sale, according to Bloomberg, but it seems all up in the air at the moment. According to the same report from Bloomberg, Discord may go public rather than sell, which might be good news for fans who dislike Microsoft's handling of other social programs like Skype and, as I recently learned, LinkedIn as of 2016, which is the worst. So
I hate LinkedIn so much.
It's terrible. But yeah, so like, to echo the entire internet, no one really seems to want Microsoft anywhere near Discord. There are other companies that seem to want to kind of buy into what Discord's doing, but, and hopefully this is true to Discord's heart as to what they've said in the past about why they made Discord. They may go public instead, which would be, you know, good business and pretty decent for the fans as well.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't like it when a giant monolithic corporation absorbs yet another thing. Like Microsoft would probably do fine with it. Discord would probably be fine. It probably wouldn't change significantly or anything. I don't know. Maybe they'd make you sign into your Microsoft account or whatever. But even assuming they don't mess with it too much, it's just never a good thing when giant companies get even bigger.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So we stand with the players on this one. Microsoft, keep your grubby mitts off.
Yeah, I mean, I use Discord for recording and communicating when we're doing our show. So yeah, losing that would be a pain.
Until the next Discord rises from the ashes and
yeah,
we have a new king.
Right.
Or queen. So that's the Discord news.
Would that be the forward. Discord discourse?
The Discord discourse. Title of ep, if I had a title of ep. That is the Discord discourse. For our last bit of news, it involves Sony. Sony, the people who make your PlayStation 5 that you can't get. In a recent report published this Monday on The Gamer, Sony is reporting to shut down PS3, PS Vita, and PSP stores. The stores are due to be closed in July, and an announcement is on the way by the end of this month. The PS Vita store, separately, is likely to stay open until August 27th, after which any digital copies of the games or DLC will no longer be available for purchase. The report, while verified by The Gamer, has not yet been verified by Sony themselves, but again, we're expecting an announcement by the end of this month. So,
yeah,
the story you were particularly interested in, so
yeah,
what's on your mind?
Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, even if it isn't confirmed that it's going to happen when they say it's going to happen, it will happen eventually, because it mm-hmm. always does. They don't run these things in perpetuity, even though I think maybe they have a responsibility to do so from a mm-hmm. games preservation standpoint. Because, yeah, this whole thing sucks for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is the games preservation standpoint. Like, you know, there are games that just don't exist anymore. You cannot play them unless you happen to own a console that had that game downloaded onto it and you never erased it or ever formatted the system or anything like that. There was a game on the Wii that I really enjoyed. It was just kind of like a small, like, indie horror-ish puzzle game called Lit. That game does not exist anywhere else, so I've still got it on my Wii, thankfully, but you cannot download that anywhere. You cannot buy that, no matter how many monies you want to pay for it. You can't do it. You know, same thing with stuff like PT. There was that weird experimental, like, what was it, like, communism simulator on the PS4? What was that called? The Tomorrow People? That was an old British sci-fi kids show. The Tomorrow Children. I think that was it. That was a neat game. My wife and I actually played that a little bit, and yeah, when they took down the servers, they were just like, yeah, it just doesn't work anymore. You can't play this anymore, and that game is just gone. You can't play any form of it. So, you know, any games that never branched out from any of those stores, those are just gone. And, you know, people are saying, like, this is a real bummer for people who bought a Vita, because a lot of the Vita's library was digital. But you know who's being forgotten about here? Are owners of the PS Go? Because that thing was all digital. You couldn't put games in it. Those people are just screwed, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it. There's a lot of kind of negatives about owning the digital copies or only holding out for the digital copies of games, thinking that they're always going to be there. And one I'd like to highlight that I don't think a lot of people recognize is that there's a certain amount of people that go into making the physical version of your game, right? There's a distributor for the actual CDs that they come on, or the cartridges that they come on. The people who distribute the art, someone to package them, someone to box them, and someone to ship them. And then, of course, you have your retailers like GameStop and Target and so on and so forth. So there's so many people involved in your physical media that at the $60 to $70 price point, that is almost like that's fine. You're paying for other people's labor at that point. And like you said, with the digital media, I'm not really paying for much there. You know, I'm getting it from a server or something, but it's going straight into the pockets of, you know, Sony. So what do I care to pay the entire price for something that is kind of more lucrative for everyone if I got the physical media for it? And this it also kind of leaves out the idea or the fact that indie developers kind of lose out here too. Indie developers, for the most part, can only put their game on digital. So you shut down the shop and you're shutting down the indie developers' games. I mean, so many people are losing out here, and it sucks.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, even if we stick with this all digital model, or, you know, we keep a lot of games digital, there's a difference between, you know, buying things from certain digital storefronts than others. Like, if I buy an MP3 off of Bandcamp, for example, I can take that MP3 and I can put that on any computer that I want to. I can duplicate it however many times I need to have backups. I can put it on an MP3 player. That's right. I have a dedicated device just to play MP3s. Get off my lawn, you kids. but with, you know, if I buy something like on the PS3 store, you know, that's stuck there. I can't move that anywhere else. You know, I can't back it up. So, yeah, it's just all this stuff is really, really troubling. And obviously, you know, the games industry has never had, you know, much of a concern for preserving its own history. You know, it's always just been kind of a business, and first and foremost, and an artistic medium, you know, second or fifth. But yeah, I just think that all really sucks. You know, it sucks to see any digital storefront get shut down without having a means to preserve those games in a more meaningful way.
And I want to kind of linger on the meaningful way part, because essentially what will likely happen is the PS3 and PS Vita and PSP games that you loved and have no longer have access to are probably going to be like re-released as remasters, complete editions or something like that, which means that the game that you bought as a digital game when it was $60 plus all the DLC that you bought for $10 and $15 thereupon is now coming out as a complete edition for $70, and you have to pay for that too. So it's just compounding the low risk that players who love these games will go out and buy them again, no matter what. And it doesn't feel good to be taken advantage of like that. So I hope there comes a day when we no longer have to rely on digital marketplaces.
Yeah, that would be nice. We could liberate our games from our capitalist overlords. Games should be free.
Wave the flag.
Free the games. Games should be
free the games. Poor people need to have fun too. And I'm pretty poor.
Oh yeah. Oh god. That is a thing that really pisses me off. And people are like, "Oh, what do you mean they're poor? They have a video game system." It's like, dude, come on.
That means nothing.
Yeah.
You ever saved a dollar before? Like, that's what it's like. Well, that's the news for this week. And what have we learned? Digital media is not the way of the future. Don't believe Andor's lies.
Yeah, it needs to change drastically and give more agency to the consumers before we should trust anyone who says they're going to be a you know, the good guy digital storefront. I'm gonna let everybody in on a little secret, just in case. I hope this isn't a surprise to a lot of you, but absolutely everything man-made is going to dissolve someday. Steam is not going to be around forever. One way or another, Steam is going to go down someday. You're not going to have access.
Don't tell me that.
Someday. It may not be for 20 years. It may not be for, you know, like, I mean, hell, the life, as I said in my show last time, the life expectancy in the United States is decreasing. So, you know, maybe it won't be a problem for people like me, an old man like me already. But, you know, someday it's not going to be there anymore. And, you know, so yeah, we need to start thinking about, you know, like what happens after the store closes? What options are you giving me for preserving these? What, you know, what resources do we have to keep these available to people for nothing else other than just posterity's sake? You know, I do a show about game history because I think there's some really fascinating stuff there. I think it's really cool hearing stories about how people started companies, made these games, you know, in times when, you know, there weren't giant tech companies that, you know, ruled over the gaming space, when it was, you know, relatively smaller companies that were, you know, just kind of up and coming and making these things. It's really interesting. And I wish the industry cared more about preserving games history. And I could talk for like another 40 minutes on this, but I should probably shut up.
It's fine. We understand game history here. That's why we do video game news, because tomorrow this will all be history. That being said, it's time to move along toward the end of the show. And we always ask you, the guest, to give our listeners a recommendation. Which game should they be playing or be on the lookout for?
Okay, so I thought I would go with something a little bit different here. So a few caveats right off the bat. I am not the best when it comes to scary games. They are too spoopy for me. Spoopy is still a thing that the kids say, right?
Spoopy is still a thing that the kids say.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'm very in touch.
As a kid, I can confirm.
So a new demo disc, well, digital demo disc. Okay, we just shat all over digital stuff, and now I'm going to tell everybody to go out and get this digital demo disc. But it's called the Haunted PS1 demo disc. They did one of these last year. Yeah, this the new one just dropped today. It's got like 25 demos of different indie games that all have a sort of lo-fi PS1 aesthetic to them. Mm-hmm. They're, I think, different genres, but they're all, you know, a little bit spooky. So if spooky games or retro games or indie games with a retro aesthetic is your jam, check out the Haunted Demo Disc. It's free to download the demos, and then, you know, any of the games that you like, you can find on itch.io, I believe. So if you just type in Haunted PS1 Demo Disc, you will probably find it pretty quickly.
It'll be sad if and or when itch.io disappears, because that's like a... That's like a wholesome digital marketplace.
you can actually like buy those games, like copy them, back them up and stuff, can't
that's
you?
That's true.
So like, yes, that's what true. I'm talking You're about. Right. So yeah, itch.io is actually the good digital marketplace.
Good one.
So yeah, support them and support the indies on there.
Absolutely. Absolutely do that. Do that indeed. I barely have a recommendation this week. mostly because it's been very busy. But you know what? I'm gonna say, hey, I've been playing fighting games a whole lot, and I think you should maybe come kick my ass in them. Guilty Gear, Revelator, Exard, you can come play that with me, or Granblue Fantasy. I've been trying to figure out who I used to play in that, so... Granblue Fantasy Versus, Tekken 7, I'm actually not that bad at. So, come fight me there and still kick my ass because I'm not that great either. But, you know.
So, question.
Either way.
Have you played or seen Fantasy Strike?
I don't think I have.
Oh, okay. So that is a really interesting one. Now, I'm... Okay, so same caveat as before. I'm bad at the games, so I mostly just watch them. But Fantasy Strike is a really fun, kind of beginner-friendly fighting game made by, I think it's Surin Games, the guy who made Chess 2.
Mm.
It's really... It's got a big emphasis on simple inputs, almost Smash Brothers-like, but, you know, still very Street Fighter type of movement and
mm-hmm.
things like that. I think it's a pretty cool-looking game. I think the mechanics are really neat. So, yeah, that one came out a couple years ago, but I've been watching some Fantasy Strike tournaments here and there, and I think they're pretty fun. There's a gambling panda. Like, there's a lady there's a lady who hits people with a paintbrush. Like, come on.
What more do you need? What more do you need except a gambling panda? Try saying that 10 times
fast. I need nothing more than a gambling panda.
Go check out those games. And finally, to finish off this episode, please let us know where we can find you on the internet and if you have anything else to plug.
Yeah, you can find me at Snescapades on Twitter and on Instagram. That's pretty much my Steampunk Link social media accounts and where I post stuff about the show. I've not been doing good on posting to Instagram, unfortunately, which I really should be because I get fewer people yelling at me about my politics there. So
it's hard.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But no, that's where you can find me there. Snescapades, the podcast, is on pretty much all the podcast apps that I'm aware of. Yeah, that is pretty much it.
Perfect. 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 All right. Well, as always, you can find me at Comic Jace Gaming on Twitter, and you can find the Weekly Cooldown as well on Twitter at WK Cooldown. Be sure to visit the Weekly Cooldown Facebook page. Visit WKCooldown.com for more news and other episodes. Be sure to leave a review or comment on Apple Podcasts. I think you can't do one without the other, so if you have something to say, make sure to leave 5 stars first. Thanks. Be sure to check out the links in the description, including, of course, our Humble Bundle for this week. You can support your favorite charities and support the show. Our logo and art is done by Corgian of Doghouse Esports. Follow Corgian on Twitter at Doghouse Corgian. That's DoghouseCorgian. And if you enjoyed the new intro music of the Weekly Cooldown debuting this week, you can thank my good friend Riki. That is Riki, R-I-K-I. Riki's Twitter is at dognoise, dog_noise. That is all that is for the weekly cooldown. I'm Commie Jace.
I'm Steampunk Link.
And we'll see you next week. Thank you, everyone.